ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Okay, so reading here from the preface, by Srila Prabhupada. The Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, or Bengali Vaishnavas, are mostly followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of whom the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are direct disciples. Therefore, Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoyve Akuti Kavehama Bhujava Se Jugala Piriti. When I am eager to understand the literature given by the Goswamis, then I shall be able to understand the transcendental loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to bestow upon human society the benediction of the science of Krishna. The most exalted of all the activities of Lord Krishna are his pastimes of conjugal love with the gopis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the mood of Srimati Radharani, the best of the gopis. Therefore, to understand the mission of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow in his footsteps, one must very seriously follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. Sri Rupa, Sanatana, Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva, Gopala Bhatta, and Dasa Raghunath. Sri Rupa Goswami was the leader of all the Goswamis, and to guide our activities, he gave us this Upadeshamrita, the nectar of instruction, to follow. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left behind him the eight verses known as Shikshastaka, Rupa Goswami gave us Upadeshamrita, so that we may become pure Vaishnavas. In all spiritual affairs, one's first duty is to control his mind and senses. Unless one controls his mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. Everyone within this material world is engrossed in their modes of passion and ignorance. One must promote himself to the platform of goodness, Sattvaguna, by following the instructions of Rupa Goswami, and then everything concerned how to make further progress will be revealed. Advancement in Krishna consciousness depends upon the attitude of the follower. A follower of the Krishna consciousness movement should become a perfect Goswami. Vaishnavas are generally known as Goswamis. In Vrindavan, this is the title by which the director of each temple is known. One who wants to become a perfect devotee of Krishna must become a Goswami. Go means the senses, and Swami means the master. Unless one controls his senses and mind, one cannot become a Goswami. To achieve the highest success of life by becoming a Goswami, then a pure devotee of the Lord, one must follow the instructions known as Upadeshamrita, which have been given by Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami has given many other books, such as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhava, and Lalita Madhava. But Upadeshamrita constitutes the first instructions for neophyte devotees. One should follow these instructions very strictly, then it will be easier to make one's life successful. Hare Krishna, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. September 20th, 1975, Vishwarupa Mahotsava, Krishna Balaram Mandir, Ramanreti, Vrindavan, India. So this is the opening of his instructions. So one must. He is given. This is the essence of the process of devotional service. By devotional service, then one can actually advance. But without knowing the process, then one will not have any direction. Means we may have attraction for Krishna. We may even want to attain Krishna. But unless we know the process, it's not possible. Anything we want, there must be a process. Without a process, then it doesn't work. So as nectar of devotion is the complete science, so this nectar of instruction then is like the essence of the whole process. So he's pointed out here is that when we are eager to understand the works of the Goswamis, then we can actually understand the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So this was given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so therefore, to understand Lord Chaitanya's mood, then we must understand the mood of Rupa Goswami, as he is given here in his literatures. So therefore, it's important. It's how we should approach. We want to know Krishna. We want to know Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we want to understand this mission, then we need to approach through this process as given by Rupa Goswami. Then we'll be able to understand. As he says in here, the one must follow in the mood like that, to follow in the footsteps. Then he says that in spiritual affairs, then the first thing is that one must become fixed in controlling the mind and senses. These go together. The mind and senses are connected. Though they're coming from different modes, but they're still connected. That the mind is the seat of desire. Whatever we want is coming from the mind. It's not coming from somewhere else. So the mind wants something, and then through the senses it endeavors to get them. This is the process. So therefore, if you can control the mind and control the senses, then spiritual life can happen. And if you can't, then there is no question of spiritual life. Spiritual life where these two aren't controlled, then it's not spiritual life. You know? It means you can't call it spiritual life. It may be something that, you know, it may be like doing 20 minutes of yoga a day, and that's all. Without any proper philosophy or any other control, then, you know, it may be good for the health, may make the mind a little peaceful, but it's not actually spiritual. It's a material thing. So here is that it begins with this. So that is very important to understand. That's where we start from. Then one can become controlling the senses. Then one can become a Goswami. He says, then you can become a pure devotee. So when the senses are controlled, then you can become a pure devotee. So pure devotee is then defined as one who is not interested in material material fruit of gain or speculative, involvement. That your gain is not for merging in the Brahman through speculation, and you're not wanting fruit of gain from whatever activity you perform. And that you're doing your activities that are favorable to Krishna, what Krishna likes, how Krishna likes it. That's called the pure devotee. So therefore then, we see is that stage can be attained if we can control the senses. So we see in the modern context, and there's so much discussion of letting the senses do whatever you like, why restrict yourself? So therefore, there's no question of advancing in spiritual life, because the first principle of controlling the mind and senses is not obtained. When the mind is controlled, senses are controlled, then we can be situated in goodness. And in goodness, then we can progress. But otherwise, in passion and ignorance, generally we will not be able to advance, because passion and ignorance means we identify with our gross and subtle nature, and we're interested in the results or the fruits of these natures. What the body has done, what the mind has thought, what the intelligence has thought, like that, we want. So therefore one cannot be a pure devotee. So this is the principle. So the book starts on this principle, that we must become a Goswami. When the mind and senses are controlled, then we can give up attachment to karma and jnana. Then we can do things that are favorable to Krishna, rather than look at it, is it favorable to my, you know, from a selfish point of view, is it favorable towards me? Right? Because we understand anything that's favorable towards Krishna is going to be favorable towards us. But we may have the tendency to try to look at it from from another angle, from the angle what my mind wants, that in the mode of passion and ignorance, then that's what we are endeavoring for. It is. So then, this is how he opens the nectar of instruction. Like this, that I know of. There's an introduction. It doesn't seem to be in this printing. You have an introduction? No, because this is... Yeah. So, but this is then printed here, looks like in Australia. It doesn't even have the page where it's printed and everything. So it seems to be a simplified version, unless this is the Indian printing. Because they've done that also. Oh, no, here we go. This was printed in Australia. 91. Yeah, it could be just a simplified.
Because also in the Gita, there's, I think, in the Bombay printing, then they take out all the Sanskrit verses in the introduction to the Gita. And because of that, then, you know, I mean, it just means you don't have those verses there. So sometimes, for certain purposes, I'm not sure either price or that, they simplify.
So then, I think you would just read through the translations. And so then we have a, you know, basically an understanding of the topic of the book. Then we'll go back and start from verse 1. So in verse 1, a sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities: eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. Or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. Text 3. There are 6 principles favorable for the execution of pure devotional service. 1. Being enthusiastic. 2. Endeavoring with confidence. 3. Being patient. 4. Acting according to regulative principles, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. 5. Abandoning the association of non-devotees. 6. Following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These 6 principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. As it says there, this will attain the perfection of pure devotional service. It means one will attain it, or within it one will then come to prema. Because pure devotional service starts from the Madhyamadikara, so from Nishta it starts, like that. Then it goes through. Because Nishta means that one has given up the anartas. So anartas such as fruitive or speculative desires, those have been given up, then you're on Nishta. Otherwise, then one is not on Nishta. So, Madhyama and pure devotional service then are, that beginning stage, that's synonymous. But then that's perfected at the platform of Prema. And the Prema Bhakti is the perfect pure devotee. While the Madhyama is the beginning stage of pure devotional service, the Bhava Bhakti is the next stage. And then the final stage is then the person who has attained prema. So therefore, if these principles are followed, one will come to the platform of prema. Text 4. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and offering prasad are the 6 symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. Text 5. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who has advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Text 6. Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having been born in a lowly family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. According to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee. But despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the waters of the Ganga, which sometimes, during the rainy season, are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganges waters do not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. Text 7. The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. Text 8. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Braja, Golok Vrindavan, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees, who are deeply attached to his devotional service. Text 9. The holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathura is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan, because of Krishna's Rasalila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it is raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent Sri Radha Kund stands supreme, for it is over flooded with the ambrosial nectaring prema of the Lord of Gokula, Sri Krishna. Where then is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve the divine Radha Kund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? Text 10. In the Shastra is said that of all types of fruit of workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord, Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge, may take to devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her Kunda lake is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as his most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radha Kund and in a spiritual body, surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, aprakrita bhava, render loving service to the divine couple, Sri Radha Govinda, who perform the Astakalya Lila, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes? Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radha Kunda are the most fortunate people in the universe. Text 11. Of the many objects of favored delight and of all the favorable damsels of Brajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love. And in every respect, her divine kund is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radha Kund is the very rarely attained even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. One simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. So we see that here he's giving the essence of all the of all the whole devotional process, and we see the emphasis is on the devotees. This is a very important point to note, is that if we want to become successful at devotional service, then we must be successful at associating with devotees. If we're not able to appreciate the association of devotees, then our advancement will be slow. This is the central point. So in the beginning stages, in the stages that, you know, that we are in the beginning stages of devotional service, in the advanced stages of bhava bhakti, and in the ultimate stages of prema bhakti, then at all these levels, association of devotees is most important. And we see to start that, then he starts with controlling the senses. When the senses are controlled, and things that are unfavorable for devotional service are established, and we take up those things that are favorable, then the next thing is, then we'll be able to appreciate the devotees. So then we take up that association. We appreciate the various kinds of devotees, the interaction, and we don't see the faults in the devotee like that. We have to be very, very careful. Then we can understand the higher principles of following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. One can't do one, the higher, if you haven't done the lower. That would be like saying that we're going to do, geometry, and we can't do, or we can't even add. If we can't take up the process of arithmetic, you cannot perform the functions of higher mathematics. So the idea is that I don't have to associate with devotees, I don't have to be properly interfacing with devotees, I can criticize devotees. And at the same time, as I'm going to then deal on these higher levels of devotional service, it doesn't work, because the foundation is in the association of devotees. This is the essential point. Means for the neophyte, the essential thing is to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that his form is eternal. Then one controls the senses, one gives up those things that are going to be an obstacle to the process, and then accepts those things that are favorable. Then he can progress. But the symptom of the difference between the neophyte devotee and the advanced devotee, or the Madhyama, is that the Madhyama appreciates the association of devotees. They're able to associate with devotees, take advantage of that association. That's what makes you a Madhyama. One wants to know simple ways to understand, then the Madhyama is one who appreciates and likes to be in the association of devotees. And neophyte is one who has difficulty in that. You may like some particular devotee, but that's because your conditioned nature and their conditioned nature get along. It's not necessarily because they're devotees like that. You know, you always associate with those who are like-minded. You know, if you're into skiing, then you hang out with other people who are into skiing. Or if you're into some other kind of sport, then you are in that kind of group or in that club or that magazine or, you know, whatever it is that you associate on that level. But then for devotees, then they have to appreciate what is devotional, the spiritual aspects. So that is then given here. Then it takes it up then into the spiritual realm. Of all the realms, then Mathura is the highest, because the Lord's appeared there. So that's already going beyond Vaikuntha. Then of that, Braj is the highest, because there then the mood of affection for Krishna is the highest. Within that, Radharani, and then her kund is as dear to Krishna as she is. So therefore for us as sadhakas, then that is the place. That place, he's actually taking it from another angle. He's taking it from the angle of performing service, not in the material form, in the spiritual form. So he's showing how the whole progress of spiritual life is. You appreciate devotees, you take advantage of their association, then you can start following in the footsteps. Then in one's spiritual form, one can perform service at, in Vrindavan, and Vrindavan at Radhakund. Then you can actually appreciate. So he's taking it right from the beginning of devotional service, right through to, the highest levels of prema bhakti. So that's, basic, general. We can see the book is given the essence of all these different things. So any questions on this? Are we gone or anything? So then, text one. Vakshu Vegam, Manasakrodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Uttarapasta Vegam. Etan Vegan Yo Vishaheta Tira, Sarvam Apimam Pitidim Sashishyat. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Oops. So we notice here is that speaking means we're supposed to be engaged in the Lord's service, body, mind, and words. So here we see tolerate the urge to speak. That's, you know, speaking. The mind's demands and the actions of anger. So that's the mind, those two. And then the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, that's the body. So if one can control the body, the mind, and the words, then one can preach. So this is the idea. So we can see that though there's 6 points being made here, it's breaking down 3 for definitions for the body, 2 for the mind, and speech is left at 1. Like that. Purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.9.10, Parikit Maharaj placed a number of intelligent questions before Sukadeva Goswami. One of those questions was, why do people undergo atonement if they cannot control their senses? For instance, a thief may know perfectly well that he may be arrested for his stealing, and he may actually even see a thief arrested by the police, yet he continues to steal. Experience is gathered by hearing and seeing. One who is less intelligent gathers experience by seeing, and one who is more intelligent gathers experience by hearing. When an intelligent person hears from the law books and shastras or scriptures that stealing is not good and hears that a thief is punished when arrested, he refrains from theft. A less intelligent person may first have to be arrested and punished for stealing to learn to stop stealing. However, a rascal, a foolish man, may have the experience of both hearing and seeing and may even be punished, but still he continues to steal. Even if such person atones and is punished by the government, he will again commit theft as soon as he comes out of jail. If punishment in jail is considered atonement, what is the benefit of such atonement? Thus Pritikit Maharaj inquired. Trishta shutabhyam yat papam jan apyatmano hitam karoti bhuya vasi divasa prayaschitam atokatam kvachin nivartate bhadrat kvachit charatina tat puna paryaschitam ato partam manye kunjara sauchavat. He compared atonement to an elephant's bathing. The elephant may take a very nice bath in the river, but as soon as it comes onto the bank, it throws dirt all over its body. What then is the value of its bathing? Similarly, many spiritual practitioners chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, at the same time commit many forbidden things, thinking that their chanting will counteract their offenses. Of the types of offenses one can commit while chanting the holy name of the Lord, this offense is called Namo Balad Yasya Hipapa Bhuti, committing sinful activities on the strength of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Similarly, certain Christians go to church to confess their sins, thinking that confessing their sins before a priest and performing some penance will relieve them from the results of their weekly sins. As soon as Saturday is over and Sunday comes, they again begin their sinful activities, expecting to be forgiven the next Saturday. This kind of prayaschitta or atonement is condemned by Pritikit Maharaj, the most intelligent king of his time. Sukadeva Goswami, equally intelligent as befitting the spiritual master of Maharaj Pritikit, answered the king and confirmed that his statement concerning atonement was correct. The sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. Thus real prayaschitta atonement is the awakening of our dormant Krishna consciousness. This is as a beginning, because this whole point is to establish the devotional service, how it begins.
So this is an important aspect of devotional service, to understand that it's not by some material means that we're going to purify ourselves. We can only purify ourselves by spiritual means. Spiritual platform is attained by spiritual activities. Prayaschitta is mundane. Though it may be pious, it may be guided by the scriptures, it may be a desirable thing on the material platform. You know, the best of the material platform. But it's still material. Therefore, prayaschitta may purify us, but it doesn't. It's different from pious activities. Prayaschitta may remove the sin. Means, how you say, the reaction of the sin. But it doesn't really get rid of the sin. Because the sin comes from desire. When you perform an activity, along with the result of that activity, the desire to perform the activity again is created. So then we see that this is the biggest problem. Right? It's just like you may pull out a weed, you know, in your lawn. But if the seeds are there, you know, or the root is there, then they'll come up again. They won't go away. So that is the problem with prayaschitta. It will get rid of the reaction. Let us say you perform the sinful activity. From that you will get a particular sinful reaction. Prayaschitta will get rid of that. But the problem is because the desire to do that activity again is still present in the heart, one will perform those activities again, and therefore then the same problem will come be there. So you haven't really solved the problem. So this is an important aspect to understand. The sixth canto of Bhagavatam then explains this quite vividly with the story of Ajamila, because this is where this came up, 6.1.9.10. So that brings up the whole, because this question came up, because in in the fifth canto at the end is describing the cosmic creation, and then in there it's describing the various hells and then what people go through there, what they've done and what they will receive. So then after hearing that, then Pratikam Maharaj asks his question, but you know, they're being purified, but actually they perform it again because they are not properly purified. The heart, they purify from the reaction, but not from the desire. Therefore, we see it starts at the mind. Right? You have to control the urges of the mind. That's the first thing. If that's there, then you can control anger. You can control, speech is mentioned as the first. So then when speech is in line, we are talking about Krishna, then naturally the mind will be controlled. And if the mind is controlled, then the senses are controlled. But if the speech is not proper, that will create anger, and then the senses will be agitated like this. It's important to understand that there's no material correction. The correction is spiritual. The only reason that material corrections will be used are for those who identify too much with the material situation. Their identity is too strong with the body, the mind, and the senses. Therefore, if you do something to inflict a disturbing situation on the body, mind, the senses of a living entity, then it awakens them to the point that there's something going wrong here. You know, like a thief steals something, and then if he is punished for it, he may connect two and two and get four. You know, that this is wrong, and if by he's stealing, then there'll be some problems. So therefore, better not to steal. But for an intelligent person, then without going through all this, then by hearing they can do. Therefore, that is why for the Vaishnavas, then this whole system of prayaschitta is not so important. Because you can do it, but the real thing is to awaken one's understanding of one's position. That one is servant of Krishna. Therefore, it's not really an important system. You know, for the devotees. For the materialists, yes, it's a must. Because they think they are the gross and subtle body, therefore punishment and dealing must be to the gross and subtle body. But for the devotee who knows they're not this body,
Therefore, it's more important to awaken the understanding of the desire to become Krishna conscious, as opposed to finding some external purification. Like this is very important, because we see in our daily life many times if someone is not Krishna conscious, then we feel that the punishment should be something external, and that will correct them. It may or may not, because unless you get rid of the desire, you can't correct someone. And the desire can only be changed by the process of chanting Hare Krishna. By reawakening Krishna consciousness, that's there. But in the process of reawakening, of course, is controlling the senses. That's where we're starting from. All this is pointing out is that control of the senses for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, that's the real prayaschitta. That's the real thing, not something else. Is there anything, any questions on this? Yes.
How does individual speech lead to individual mind?
Because what you speak about is what your mind will dwell upon. You know, I mean, they go together. But speech is, see, because the mind is controlled by intelligence. So basically what we're getting here is we're dealing with the various coverings on the soul. So the covering of the mode of ignorance is the body, right? And that's what we identify with. You know, so there's the eight material elements, right? So then earth, water, fire, air, ether, that's what the body's made out of. And that is coming from, that is manifesting from ignorance. Also, then, the ego, the identification, is manifesting from ego, ignorance. That's the eighth, or the, how you say, yeah, when we go from the bottom up, it's the eighth element. So these two go together. The first five and the eighth, they go together. Those are both expanding from ignorance. It is the gross body and our identification with it. Then, from the mode of passion, comes the intelligence and the senses. So the intelligence is actually the controller of the senses. They're directly connected there. But the senses and the intelligence are engaged by the mind to fulfill its desires. Therefore, then the mind, much of the time, becomes what's associated with the senses. So if you can control, and so of all the senses, the most important is the speech. If the speech is engaged properly, then we will see all the other senses we can bring into line. We can control what we speak about. So that means the intelligence is controlled. So then we can bring everything into line. So the intelligence can control the mind. Therefore, speech will be first, then the mind. Because the intelligence is higher than the mind. So our process in the Gita is given as Buddhi Yoga, or the process of the yoga of intelligence. So by intelligence we understand what should be done, and we do that. Otherwise the mind does what it likes to do. See, the normal thing is that what the mind wants, that's what you endeavor for. But it may not be good for us. Therefore, what is intelligent, that was what must be endeavored for. And then the mind has to be retrained on what's good for it, what it should desire. So if the speech is proper, then you can control the mind. If the mind is peaceful, it doesn't get angry. It gets angry if it can't get what it wants. Does that make some sense? On why that order is there? Yeah. And the mind is then.
How does that fit in with thinking, feeling, and willing?
Thinking, feeling, and willing means the mind, how you say? Thinking means that you are attracted to something, but you haven't decided whether you want it or not. Right? Like you walk down the street and you see something in the window in the shop, and it attracts your attention. So you think about it. You know, you'll try to connect, you know, if yourself and that item in the window have some connection. If we find there's a connection, then the next thing is we want it. So that's feeling. So that's our goal. And so then once we've attained, we're established, fixed in the goal, then there's activity. Until there's a goal, there's no activity. So therefore you find many times there's people, their life is listless, directionless, like that, because they do nothing. You find a lazy person has no goal. Someone with a goal works. Because once a goal is attained, that means the goal is a need, what you need. Then you endeavor. So this is the process, is that how to become attracted. So you can't become attracted to Krishna if the senses, mind, and speech are uncontrolled. If those are controlled, then you can become attracted to Krishna. Then you can become a pure devotee. That's why it says first you become a Goswami, then you can become a pure devotee. Because if the mind is thinking of other things, it won't become attracted to Krishna. And from that attraction, then following in the footsteps of the devotees, then that becomes a need. Then when that need is there, then one can perform those activities. Right? So on this platform, then, by intelligence we control the mind. We see what is good. So we see that this, we should want this. We should consider about Krishna and his devotional service. We should desire pure devotional service. And that is what will make us happy. We want to become happy. Okay, so therefore I say, then I need it. So that's the feeling. So then, next is willing, then I'll do. You know? So that is for the starting devotional service. Then the next stage is that when you're purified and in the platform of pure devotional service, then you go to the next stage. Because now you're not battling so much with the material world as with you have a taste for Krishna consciousness, but it's still the same framework, is that then more deeply you have to desire to serve Krishna, you have to need that, and then you endeavor for that. So that's how the thinking, feeling, and willing works. So now if your goal is on something material, then, and we don't attain it, then anger is next. You know, so that is natural. So when, in our process of thinking, feeling, and willing, then if we can't gain what we will, you know, we can't gain our desire, our goal, what we're feeling towards, then we'll be frustrated. So we become angry. Is that making
sense? Yeah, I was thinking in relation to the previous question about the speaking before the thinking.
Yeah.
It will appear that we think about something and that sort of that motivates us to do it, whereas he was questioning about speaking about it.
Yes, but what you want to do is what you talk about.
Yeah.
Therefore, if you can control the speech, that means then you're controlling the mind. That's why if you want to focus on one of them, you focus on what you talk about. Because the mind is going to go all over, it's just business, it wanders. You know, it's constantly, it works on a binary, it's like a computer, it's a binary code. Yes, no, that's all there is. There's no other consideration by the mind. We'll think it is, but all those things are simply to create yes or no. Right? And all that's coming from the intelligence, where there's discrimination and thinking about something and contemplate, that's intelligence, that's not the mind. The mind is using the intelligence for that. But the mind just goes, I want it, I don't want it, that's all. That's all the mind does, it doesn't do anything else. So, but it engages in all these things to make that decision. You think of it this way, that way, so many ways, this is called thinking. Then when you hit upon it, then you want it, then there's activity. So if you can control the speech, means you have controlled the mind. Like that. You know, just like on the body, if you can control the tongue, you've controlled all the senses. So the tongue, this will come up, that's the central sense. The central point. If you can control the tongue in its speaking and eating, then the other aspects come automatically. Like that. You know, if you can avoid, like it says, criticizing devotees. The mind will go here and there. It's very hard to always notice where it's going. So unless you have something else for it to go, it only goes where it likes to go. So if it hasn't become attached to Krishna, then it's going to move through things that aren't attached to Krishna. If it likes Krishna, it's only going to move there. The gopis, their mind wanders, and all it thinks about is Krishna. Even if they don't want to think about Krishna, it will only think about Krishna. Like that. So it moves in a field that it finds some satisfaction. You know? So that's just going to do that. But more is if you focus on what you speak about, how you speak, you know, then you can catch the mind. Because the mind is going to express itself. That's the natural thing, through the senses. So therefore you speak. And so what comes into the mind you speak about. But if you don't let yourself speak about certain things, the mind has to be engaged. Therefore it will by nature then go to those things that you're allowed to speak about. You know what I'm saying? Is that in the beginning it may be, you may find a bit of a vacuum. You know, but once you adjust to that, that's just the way it is. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So you can catch what you're going to say, how you said it. You know. So that thing, if you focus on that, that's how you can catch the mind. Because then it will adjust to it, just speaks within that field. And if that field is Krishna conscious, and without criticizing devotees, then your mind is actually controlled. Yes, because the intelligence and the senses come from are manifest from the mode of passion, so they have the same nature. Well, the mind is manifested from goodness, so the natures are different. So therefore, the intelligence and the speech are directly connected. Yes. You speak what you think, but that's because the mind has to express itself through the senses. What the mind wants, you know the world through your senses. The portal into the world is your senses. It's not something else. We think it's the mind, but the mind is only contemplating what it's seen, heard, smelled, touched, tasted. It's not working on something else. It's not thinking of something different than that, unless it's thinking of Krishna. Right. So then, and even that is based on what we've heard. So then we see through Shastra by the ears. So we enter this world through the senses, and we know the world through the senses. And then that's what the mind then will function on, what it will work with. So the speech then is directly connected with the intelligence. Though the mind, because it is the central feature, means if you notice in this that it's in the center, right? It's in the center. You have the body. The body is below the mind, and above, it's the most outside. The body and the false ego. These are the most of the eight elements there on the outside. Inside that, the next layer in, and that's the mode of ignorance. The next layer in is the intelligence and the senses. Then in the middle is the mind. You understand that? So the five elements and the ego, that's on the outside. The outside shell. Then, subtler than that, then you get into the senses on the body, and then grosser than that is then the intelligence. Like that. Then in the middle is the mind. So you have ignorance, passion, then goodness. So the mind is the central feature. The mind is what you're trying to catch. Like that. That is what we're trying to get a hold of. So you have to, by using the intelligence, by using the speech, controlling the speech, and the other, senses, then you can catch the mind, like that. Then you have to go to the next stages where the mind gives up its desire to enjoy the material world and wants to serve Krishna. When it does that, then it becomes our friend. And if it wants to enjoy the material world, then it's our enemy. You know? Does that make some sense?
can be linked with intelligence also.
Yeah, it means it's because it's in the middle.
It's not a gray area, sort of thing. I mean, it can go this way or this way also.
Yeah, yeah.
It can control the speech also.
Means it doesn't control the speech that the intelligence does. It can desire to control the speech. The mind only desires, it doesn't actually control. It only wants. It doesn't actually do. It's the intelligence that does. Because to control the speech means you have to discriminate between it means that these are the things that can be said. You could say this, or you could say this, or you could say this. Then the mind decides which one it wants to say. Then when the mind has decided, then the intelligence then does it. Because it's the one that's controlling the sense. Because it has to pick this one. So that's discrimination. So that's intelligence. But the desire of which one, that's the mind. Right? Like the child, you take them to the shop and you ask them what ice cream they want. So they say they want this one. But they're not getting it. Right? The money came out of the adult's pocket. The adult went over and ordered it. The adult got it. The adult gave it to them. But the whole process is going on simply by what the kid wants. But the kid, all he did was desire. He's hungry. Okay, then how do you make the decision? Then you could eat this, 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 this. That's intelligence. Okay, I want this. Okay, then how to get that? We could get it this, 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 this way. That's intelligence. Okay, we'll do it like this. So the mind simply makes the choices that the intelligence can present. And then, once it's presented, then it engages the senses. So that's the thing, is that we give more credit to the mind than what it actually is. So many times we take the whole process of the mind and the intelligence working together as mind. In the modern context, that is, it's one. But in the Vedic, it's split into two clear things. So they're interrelated. Therefore, you can have a conversation in your head, you know, is because that is the mind and the intelligence arguing with each other. Like that, you know, so that's the fun. It's nothing to do with us. Because of ego, we identify with it, then we think it's us, but it's not. Therefore, they can go on argue all day and we don't care. You know, you guys can talk, I will chant Hare Krishna. And you'll find very quickly they'll just come in line. Right? Little kids there yelling, screaming, I want this, that. Okay, you stay here and do this, that. I'm going. You know? Tantrum's over like that. No. They just... So one just has to know the science of what they are. And then, because you know who they are, they can't bewilder us. Because they'll only act, that's all they can do. Mind can only accept and reject. It can't do anything else. And the intelligence can discriminate. It can break things apart and put things together. That's what it does. It can connect this and that. You know? Intelligence goes, wow, hey, this and that go together. And then mind goes, I want it. You know? Right? And then it's now intelligence how to get it. Okay, now we could get it by, you know, going here, there, this, that. Okay, this one. So that's there. So someone who, you know, yeah, so therefore we see is that in people, you call someone more intelligent and someone more emotional or more, you know, just, how you say, not spontaneous is another.
Yeah, whimsical, like that,
you know, just they want it and then they got to have it. And there's no logic to it. It's just stupidness. But that means just someone, the both are working, the intelligence and the mind, all the time. But someone puts more emphasis on one and one puts more emphasis on the other. So therefore someone will contemplate more, look at it more, pick it apart more, try all the different angles more before deciding on one. And someone just, you know, is that impetuous? Impulsive. Yeah, they just you know, anything, you know, just grab anything. Then that's the most difficult, because then the mind is too much in control and the intelligence is not. It's better in the conditioned state that the intelligence is stronger than the mind, because then it can control the mind, the senses. Otherwise, if the mind's the stronger one, then it will control the senses, and then it's a problem. Like that. Does that make any sense? Or?
Yeah, yeah. Means they're connected. Means one of the five elements of the mind, intelligence, one of them is memory. So that is the aspect that the mind can access. The mind will go into the intelligence to see what is the, you know, previous record on this particular thing. You know, like that. So that is where the connection is. So that works smoothly without us really noticing it. But when we end up with an argument in the head, that's because there's a difference of opinion here. Because they're elements, they're not us. That's the thing. We identify with them, so we consider them us, but they're not us. They're just the subtle body. And the soul is beyond that. The consciousness is beyond that. Therefore, you can have all this fun going on in the head. You know? If it was us, then it would just happen smoothly. Like an animal fully identifies and is fully convinced that they are the body. Therefore, it is just smooth. You don't find animals being perplexed about what to do. You know? It's smooth. It just happens. Like that. But the human being, because they're not actually convinced that they are, they're pretty sure that they're the body and the mind. But there is a doubt because it doesn't always work. It doesn't always make them happy. So they're doubtful of, is this actually, is this right, where it's coming from? That's what the glory is of the human species, is it doesn't have that instinct isn't its main thing. It's the thoughtfulness is more. Okay?
Yeah. The individual soul said that the soul is simply desire, so is it the mind intelligence of the interface between the soul?
Yeah.
And the
well, there's a subtler point than this. Generally we only discuss these three, but there's a fourth element, which is more subtle, which we generally don't talk about much. Though it's talked about, but it won't be so, scientifically dealt with. See, we know of the gross body. We know of the subtle body. Then there's a material body of consciousness. Like that. It's called the karana deha. You have the gross body, the subtle body, and the karana. So the shtula sharir, the shukshma sharir, and the karana deha. So when very technical, like the Vedanta Sutra will discuss it. And those scriptures that deal on the very, very technical levels, like Shankya, so that is the desire to be the controller and enjoyer. So that's desire, but it's not, this is not the mind, this is beyond the mind. We want to be God. So that's that body. Because from not wanting to serve, the natural position of the soul, the platform of the soul is service. That's why you see when Prabhupada describes the soul and describes nature, or starts describing religion or varnashram, immediately he goes to this point. Because the essential point is this: if you understand the soul's nature, then you can understand all these others. Means that to approach varnashram without understanding the soul will never be successful. Like that. Means if you really want to understand, even from the material point of view, you have to understand the nature of the soul. But from the spiritual point of view, it's indispensable. So therefore, the soul is servant. Because being Shakti, it's servant. It's not Purusha. Purusha means male. The soul is female, is servant. So therefore, its duty is to serve God. But the soul has decided it wants to be male, it wants to enjoy. Therefore, then it gets this subtle, super subtle covering of polluted intelligence, polluted consciousness. So that's the karana sharira. That's the karana means cause. So that's the cause of the whole material existence. It's just the general principle I want to control and enjoy. Right? How you'll do it, then that's different. Just like you take the modern culture. the principle it's based on is controlling and enjoying. As long as that can go on, they don't care how you do it. Right? Otherwise, then why is it even things that some years back are considered bad, today then they'll consider good? You know? At one time, so many of the drugs that are there now were legal. Then they figured out they weren't good. They were banned. And then after time, they become legal again. Because they can't understand. The main thing is if it's enjoyable, then it may be a bona fide thing. Because that's their platform. But everybody does it in a different way. You know, someone's into sports, someone's into, you know, study, someone's into, you know, a sense gratification, someone's into making money, someone's into spending money, someone's into whatever their way is of enjoying, that's all right. You want to control through money, through power, through charisma, through whatever, it doesn't matter. It's all bona fide. As long as there's control and enjoying, then it's fine. That's the bottom line. And in civilized societies, then, you know, more sophisticated, as long as your control doesn't bother my control, and your enjoying bother my enjoying, then it's okay. But if your enjoying and control bothers mine, then that's not good. You know, just like a monopoly. Why is it considered bad? It means guy's the smartest guy. You know, if we're working on, you know who's smart, you know it gets it. Then the guy who's been able to create a world monopoly, he's the smartest. So he should be lauded. This is a great thing. As far as, you know, wealth and power goes, he's the most together. Therefore, it should be appreciated. But it's not appreciated. Why? Because then no one else can control and enjoy. Therefore, so it's very contradictory. You know, you scrabble, you know, claw your way to the top and cut out this one and that one. That's okay. Because it still leaves room for everybody else to do it also. But when you get the monopoly, it means no one can do it. Therefore, this is bad. Because they all say, monopolies are bad. But if you look at what they're trying to attain, it should be considered good. This guy was the best. But no, a dictatorship is bad. Why? Because then no one else can control. Right? And in the academic world, conclusion, forget it. You know, it's like sin. As soon as there's conclusion, mental speculation is over. So then they cannot enjoy. So therefore, conclusion is like banned in the intellectual circles. You know, dictatorship is banned in the, you know, administrative circles. You know, monopoly is banned in the, you know, in the circles of economic development. Like that. And senses, everybody has their own, so there's not much ban there. You know, you can't enjoy all the senses, you know. Like that. You know, so therefore, there on that platform at least, then there's some. So that's where variety is, you know. We're very broad, liberal, right, because everybody can enjoy. As long as we keep control on these others. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, that's good. Yeah, we'll get to you.
He's saying that desire is different from consciousness.
The material desire is. That's a special kind of consciousness, what we're saying. I mean, consciousness is, so you have material consciousness and you have spiritual. So there's five levels of consciousness. On the conscious level of the mind, on the level of the senses, then extended sense gratification, then the mind, then the intelligence, then on the platform of the soul. So the platform of the soul, that then is spiritual. And that is the natural position, because that is then that desire of the soul is then what to serve God through one's natural relationship. But when one decides not to serve God on that, he wants to himself be the enjoyer and controller, that develops these other four levels of consciousness. So all of those come within the one category. So those are under the control of, so it said, polluted consciousness. So that means these first four. Because the fifth one is considered pure consciousness. So that's what develops. So when that polluted consciousness is there, then it can manifest in any of those four ways. Either interest in the sense gratification, interest in other sense gratification, interest in philosophies and, you know, religious principles, or interested in the process of, you know, mental speculation and liberation. And through that, then the living entity will just cycle, you know, in this material world. You know, karma, jnana, and yoga. They'll just spend their time with that. So that's general. You just want to control and enjoy. How you specifically want to, that is then the next level down on the subtle body of the mind, what it values at this time. And that then manifests, then the senses gather around that, and then that creates your body. Like that. So then what you have now is the detail of the desire to be the controller and enjoyer. That's why you have to remove both. You have to first get rid of, deal with my desire to control and enjoy in this life. You know, I have particular desires. And so those who are useful to engage in Krishna service, I use them. Those that are not, those are rejected. So then, but still you may control that, but then there's the principle that I want to be the controller and enjoyer. So that's the next stage that needs to be addressed. Though in the beginning, that's not. The beginning is just to catch control of what you have right now. And then the next stage is to get rid of the desire to be the controller and enjoyer.
So you have this desire to be the controller and enjoyer, and the intelligence is discriminating between what's right and wrong, and the mind is saying, I like this and I don't like this.
Yeah.
Where does insanity occur?
Insanity is when the mind wants more than what it can actually get. When the lust increases too much, there's insanity. You'll generally find insane people are very lusty. That's because of this. The lust is so much, they can't fulfill their desires. So then they go crazy. Like that. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be, you know, sexual or sensual, but it just means that their desire, the hankering, you know, they want to control the whole world or something. You know, they can't get it, and so then they go nuts. Because there's too many things happening. You know, it's just like it's a short circuit. You know, and so as long as that's there, then they may have to go through many lifetimes to adjust that, where you figure it's not worth it. You know, then you adjust, okay, we can't control the whole world, we'll control part of it, you know, like that. Or, I can't get this, so I'll get that. You know. Does that make some sense?
The question was, you mentioned Karana Sharira. Is that synonymous with false ego?
No. False ego is in the subtle body. That's in the Sukshma Sharira. Sukshma means subtle. Stula means gross. Stula Sharira means the gross body. That's earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then the false ego, That is one of the three elements of the Sukshma Sharira, which is mind, intelligence, false ego. Because the false ego is based on what is your body. So this is going beyond. It's not what your body is. You're the controller and enjoyer. It doesn't matter what it is. It's just the principle.
Just getting pardon the expression, by the Gita Prabhupada said, two psychic divisions of false ego.
Okay, but it doesn't mean that that's the element. You understand? That's what I'm saying, is these things are here. You need to go. See, there's the element of false ego, but that's only one of four kinds of false ego. You see, in the discussions in the Bhagavatam, then there's Shankarshan, Prajumna, Vasudev, and Aniruddha, right? So Vasudev is that platform of the Brahman platform, but it's like when the living entities are sent into the material world, right? They are by the glance of Mahavishnu. So then what enters is the living entities, time, and ego, false ego. So then the pradhan, which is just dead matter, then becomes surcharged. It becomes alive. And then that's called Mahatattva. So that stage, nothing is broken apart. All the elements are still mixed. Everything's in there. But the living entities, they are thinking, they're on the Brahman platform, but they are thinking, I am the controller and enjoyer. So that is the basis of all the other aspects of false ego. Right? So that's the Vasudeva platform. Right. Then you have the Sankarshan, which means the gross body, and that element called false ego. Then your prajumna is the intelligence and senses, and aniruddha is the mind. So all those are the seats of ego. But they're based on the controlling and enjoying. Right? And then because you want to be the controller and enjoyer, then wherever we are in the material cycle, then we're going to have a body that's been based around the mind. Right? The mind has a desire. It will then put the senses around that, what senses it wants, and then those senses have to be put in a particular body. Right? Does that make you understand? So then it comes out from there. So that's where I was pointing out before, is that you have like the bigger circle is the gross body and the false ego, that I am this body. Then the next one in from that, subtler than that, is the intelligence and the senses. Then inside that is the mind. And in the core of that, then is the desire that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So you call all that false ego, though there is specifically an element called false ego. See, that's something you get in the Vedic that you don't get in the modern. See, in the modern, if you want to make let's say an outline of something and you have headings, you cannot use a heading twice. But in the Vedic, they always use it twice. Because it's like anything you want to do has a preliminary and a conclusion. And then you have the essential point in the middle. You know? You understand? So it's just like you have cooking. So, okay, so we can say cooking. Okay, we're gonna study cooking. Okay. So then in cooking, as a subheading, you're going to have preparation. Right? So that means, you know, buying your vegetables, washing your vegetables, cutting your vegetables, washing your pots, collecting all your utensils, collecting your spices, like that. Okay, that's all in preparation. Then you're going to have cooking, right? Where you actually put them in the pot and apply heat and all that, and you cook something. Then after that, you're going to have, you know, serving. You understand? So in the modern thing, they'd find another word for either the cooking or for the heading. They wouldn't use the same word twice. You wouldn't call the overall thing cooking and then call the middle element, main element, cooking, because it'll be confusing. You know, but you're calling this cooking and you're calling the whole thing cooking, so which is the cooking? No. Cooking means there has to be a preliminary, then the actual thing, and then there has to be a purpose for that. Right? An activity gives you a goal. So if you want to describe an activity, you have to describe the elements necessary to do the activity, and you have to describe the goal. So therefore, in the Vedic, then they always use the word twice. Is the overall, and then this process, because the process of sambandha abhideya prayojan or relationship process and goal is understood. This is called trayi, like that. So it's a fundamental principle. It means everything that goes on in this world is based on these three principles, like that. There's nothing that happens that doesn't work by these three. So that's also then another way of describing it would be thinking, feeling, and willing. Thinking is relationship. Feeling is goal. And willing is your process. So therefore, that's where the problem comes, is that false ego is a general topic. And then there are the four divisions of false ego. And in that, one of them, as an element, is labeled as false ego. Because it's the most obvious. Right? Means your ego as senses is more subtle. It's not really what you're identified with. You know, you think you have the best nose in the world for smelling perfumes. It's, you know, and you're proud of it. So it doesn't really, they'll identify with the nose, but with the sense of smell, they won't. You know, that's the thing. They'll identify with the body. So therefore, that's why that one's called false ego. Because it's the obvious one. Right? And the other ones are so subtle that they aren't really... Because in the modern, especially the modern thing, they can't tell the difference between the mind and the intelligence. And what are the functions between them? They don't know. So that is in Vedic psychology, then that's given in great detail. But the modern, you know, by observation, then they find more and more out. But it takes a long time to go by ascending process. But by descending, then you can hear it and understand it immediately. So therefore, it's not a field that we're accustomed to. You know, so that's why there's a difference. And then beyond that, there's the Purusha Bhav. So in the Vedic literature, it's not always described. It's described in Vedanta, but it's not necessary in your other philosophies, because Vedanta is for going out of here and getting into the spiritual world, like that. Therefore, the Karanasura has to be addressed. But if you're interested in going to heavenly planets, interested in going to Brahman, or interested in Yoga City, you have to have that Karanasura to do that. You have to think, I'm the controller and enjoyer of the heavenly planets. You think I'm God, so therefore I can, you know, become Brahman. Or as the yogi, I'm the big mystic yogi, so therefore I can do whatever I want, see my mystic's power and all these things. So you have to have the Karanasura. So therefore it's not addressed. That's why it's only brought out in Vedanta Sutra. It's not brought out in other literatures, because you can't function if it's not there. If you give it up, you cannot be a Karmakandi, a Gyanakandi, or a yogi. If that's given up, then you have to, the only alternative left is to be a devotee. That's it. Because then you've understood, I am servant. So then I am servant of who? God. So that's why it's only discussed. It's not discussed as much. While the other, then that's applicable to everybody. Everybody will accept gross and subtle. You know, everybody accepts that. Like that. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Okay. You had something? Okay.
More or less the same question.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
So the Karanasura is basically the consciousness of the conditioned soul.
Yes. It's polluted. It's polluted consciousness. It's not the specific consciousness, it's just the desire to control and enjoy. This is mentioned in Gita. When one becomes envious of Krishna, that creates this. We know it, probably you'll be more familiar with it, known as Purusha Bhav, the mood of the Purusha.
At what point in the progress of devotional service is this given up or overtaken by spiritual consciousness?
It means it's, if one understands, if one is trying to serve Krishna, it's already being going away. But the place where you can see it go away, technically, is in the 10th canto, where Krishna plays the flute for the gopis to go to the rasa dance. Those who went don't have it. Those who had or stayed back still had it. So at that time, that was burnt up. Then they could go. That's what it's meant by there was some tinge of material. Because they didn't have material, they had spiritual bodies. And their minds, everything is spiritual. That's the meaning of Surup Siddhi. But it still has that element there. So therefore it says that in the platform of Bhava, that it's akin to like a box where you've had kept hing. You know, asvatita. And you've removed the hing, you've washed the box, so there's not a speck of hing inside. But it still smells like hing. So that's the platform of Bhava, the earlier stages, is there is no material contamination, there is no conditioned nature like that. Because conditioned nature is specific. You know, I am this body, I am this enjoyer. I'm in one of the 8,400,000 species of life, and, you know, I do those things. But you have the point is back from that is that I am the controller and enjoyer. Therefore, we see those gopis didn't go because they were happy with their household life and taking care of the kids and making their cow dung patties and cooking and serving and doing all those things. Because can't get a better place for all these things than the spiritual world. You won't find a better place than that. But they hadn't completely developed their love for Krishna. You know, 100% their attraction for Krishna. It was almost perfect, but not completely perfect. So that's when that goes away. And so when that's gone, then also the gopis thought, we're the best. right? So that had to be removed. You know, these kind of, well, that's like, see, it's a slightly different thing, but it's an ego. It's real. They are the most. They are the best. So it's not false, but still that kind of mood is not appreciated by Krishna. So that's then even on a more subtle level, because then the mood of service isn't completely there, right? Because others then they serve Krishna, and it's more straightforward. But for the gopis, it's what pleases Krishna. That's what they want to do. So here they want to please themselves. I want to dance with Krishna, you know. But here it's, we want to take part in the rasa dance. How Krishna wants it to happen. He wants it to happen in a certain way. So until everybody agrees to that, then that's why there's so much disturbance on that first night. He's there, then he leaves, and then all that. That's all to bring about this proper adjustment so that everybody is on the proper transcendental plane. But going into the purely into spiritual, that's at that point when the gopis are held back. It's not just only the gopis. I'm just saying this is an example of it. Yeah, that's until it's bhava, there is no question of siddhadeha. Siddhadeha means bhava. This is synonymous. That's what it mentions in here, that in one's aprakrita bhava, one has performed service in Vrindavan. So to perform service and try to perform service in Vrindavan when one doesn't have the spiritual form, that's called sahaja. That is the difference between the pure Gaudiya Vaishnavism and the Apa Sampradayas. Is the Apa Sampradayas, they want to do that service and imagine they are doing that service. So, but bhava is performed on the platform of mind. They don't have it. They're simply imagining they have it. So when they come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, then only then you can do, because you have to not have the one to do the other. You can't be conditioned by the one to the other. So when you come to that platform where you're unconditioned, you come to the platform of liberation. So you're on Brahma-Bhuta. At that point, then you can take up your spiritual form and then serve. But you're still doing it through the agency of the mind. But the mind is pure. But only by the association of the eternal associates, then do you get that complete attraction for Krishna. And without that, then you cannot come to prema. Because you have to get to prema. Bhava is not enough. Like that. Because.
So it's not as a hazard before bhava, simply getting attention to sadhana bhakti.
Yeah, it means there is only. Raganuga is also sadhana. This is the mistake. It means, let's say spontaneous, but you should probably replace the word spontaneous with whimsical. That would more define much of the contemporary definition of spontaneous devotional service. Spontaneous means you're doing it because you like to do it. Vaidhi means you're doing it because it's the intelligent thing to do. But the externalism looks exactly the same. That's the thing. The Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti look the same. They don't look different for a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Because a Gaudiya Vaishnava, there's five elements that are opposed to Raganuga. That's worship of Rukmini, you know, Dwarka Dhyanam, using the Kusa belt, using the or Kusa rings, like that. That's the fifth. Mudras and Nyasa on ourself. These are used in the worship, but they're not used for ourselves, putting the mantra on ourself and that. Otherwise, is the idea we become the mantra. So those five, but we don't use them anyway. Like Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as a tradition, don't use them. And especially, you know, Prabhupada never, you know, much of the time we don't even know they exist. So therefore, the Vaidhi that we're performing and the Vaidhi that would be performed by someone on the platform of Raganuga is the same. It's not different. Some try to claim that it's something different, but it's not different. that they're creating their own process. Rupa Goswami has already given the process. You do that because it's a matter of the mind. Right? You know? Example, we've all heard the example of, Prabhupada gives us that the wife, the paramour, performs her duties more nicely, her household duties, so as not to be suspected. That's someone on Raganuga. Is they're doing the one thing. How can the wife be cooking perfectly, cleaning the house perfectly, interfacing with the child and the husband perfectly, but be thinking of someone else the whole time? Right? Is it possible? You take a new person and say, okay, now we're going to cook, and then they're going to think of something else? No, they have to be completely focused. Therefore, without variety, there is no rag. This is the fun. People want to start from zero and just be right there. It doesn't happen. Right? Therefore, the thing of patience is mentioned. Without patience, then there is no pure devotional service. The girl gets married today and then she says, where's the baby? No, that takes a little time. You know? It takes time. So these are all, why are these examples given? These are standard and these are given by the acharyas directly in relationship. That example, I only know of it that it's given in relationship to explaining Raganuga Bhakti. It's not used anywhere else. The one about the wife and the paramour doing the household duty. That's to make the point is that the Vaidhi sadhana is done perfectly by the Raganuga sadhana, sadhaka. There's an idea that Raganuga doesn't mean sadhana. No, but it's called Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Sadhana Bhakti means we're conditioned and we're technically, you know, not on the, you know, the most ideal platform. We're still conditioned. So that has two divisions, Vaidhi and Raganuga. So Vaidhi means you develop the habit. Within that habit, then you can have the spontaneous attachment. But without the one, you can't have the other. Right? Unless you've already done it before. Some may say, no, you could just take it up. Yes, if you've already done it in previous lives, you've done your Vaidhi, so then you'll come in contact with a very short time, then you can move to the next. But then you'll be able to see the habit. If you can't see the habit, then it's not. Then that's called whimsical or sporadic. Not spontaneous, sporadic. Sporadic whimsical devotional service. Now and again they sit down and they read this and that and talk this and that, and then the rest of the time they're down at the pool hall or out playing soccer or out smoking a joint or, you know, doing something important to them. That's not spontaneous devotional service. That's cheap. That's why it's called sahaji. It's just cheap. You just think, yes, I am. But it's real. So that's why then Rupa Goswami spends, in the first part of Nectar Devotion, he explains the whole process. First five chapters, he gives you an overview of what is devotional service. And then from the sixth chapter to the 15th chapter, then, isn't it? Yeah, I think so. Then he explains Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Then two chapters he explains Raganuga. I think one or two chapters on Bhava Bhakti, then one on Prema. So once one has an overview and one has gotten down Vaidhi, then the others come very easily. Like that. One comes with the other. If you already know arithmetic, then you can do algebra. If you don't know arithmetic, you can't do algebra. So to say, yes, we'll just go straight to algebra. Oh, why waste our time with arithmetic? It's not proper. Right? And then, yeah. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So like that, we have to see. Plus, they're saying that they're performing that, but they say you have to do this, otherwise it's nonsense. Vishwanath says here and this one says there. But that exactly is the definition of Vaidhi Bhakti, is you're doing it because it has to be done. You understand? If you don't do like this, then it's nonsense. It's not advanced, it's just Vaidhi. But they're giving you definitions based on scripture. And that's their determination. That's the definition by Vishwanath of Vaidhi. Is you're doing it because the scriptures say. Right? I go to Mangalarti because the scriptures say you should be up in the Brahma Muhurta and should go. And it's the best time. You fix the mind. You focus the mind. You purify the mind. It's the first impression of the day. So it's samskar. Like this. So we do it. That's called Vaidhi. When you do it because you like Mangalarti, you like being there, you like seeing the Lord, you like singing, you like doing those things, that's Raganuga. That's spontaneous. There may be details of that. Yes, it needs to be focused, this, that. But this is the principle of it. And Prabhupada gives us principles. He very clearly discusses these things. Details is another thing. They're there. Details are there, right? You have to tell details to a 13-year-old girl about boys? No. You'd have to tell unlimited details to an 8-year-old girl because she wouldn't know what's going on. Right? But to a 13-year-old girl, you don't have to explain boo. You just have to show them a boy. That's it. Right? So the same thing is there, hidden in these verses. Those who are on those platforms, that verse is enough to open the whole door. And someone who's not, then you can, volumes can be there and won't remember. Does that make some sense? Like that. So that's why all this, you know, has to be, he's giving all this as the essence, so we know what is the process, what's going through, what's happening and everything like that. Then it becomes very, very clear. And then we can progress very nicely. And we know where we are. We're at this point here. And so therefore we perform those duties. And we know where the next point is. But we know where the goal is. And then we'll steadily and in a dynamic way progress. Otherwise, if we don't know where we are and where the goal, how will we progress? You know? Because we say, yes, you can do this at this point in your spiritual life. Yes, you could. But if you understood what's going on. But unless you understand the rest of it, how you know? You know? You know, the girl's attracted to the boy. Fine. Okay. That's nice. Spontaneous. But does she know what is a girl? Or does she know what is a boy? So she's attracted, but can she make it work? No, because she doesn't know what a girl is. She doesn't know who she is. So how she can perform her duties? How does she know what would be her relationship with a boy? How does she know what a boy is? What does a boy need? What does she as a girl need? How to combine that? It's a science. So the attraction is there, but unless that attraction is deep enough, it doesn't work. Because we see boys and girls all over the whole planet are being attracted to each other. And then they get together, they get married, and then it falls apart. Why? Because they don't know the science. Therefore, you learn the science, then you can function on that spontaneous platform. Otherwise, how you'll function? Like that. But they go side by side. It's not that you do Vaidhi and when it finishes, then it, no, it overlaps. It's already starting. Elements of Bhava Bhakti are already coming in the newest devotee. Right? You hear about who you are. That's why I wanted to read the introduction, because that's explained there. It's not in here. Is that in Bhav Sadhana, then Shravana Dasa means you hear who you are. So what is the essence of who we are? We're servants of Krishna. So Prabhupada always started